Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You're listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz with Pet Life Radio and The Pet Doctor. And everyone who's ever thought, oh, your dog or cat is just being bad, there's really no such thing as a bad dog or cat. There's only misunderstood pets with behaviors that don't fit our definition of what is good. A trainer may be able to get your pet to come, sit, stay, but the dog that has panic attacks and the cat with territory issues, a veterinary behaviorist is just what the doctor ordered. We're going to be chatting today with Dr. Karen Sueda. She received her degree in veterinary medicine from the University of California at Davis. She later completed a 3-year residency in clinical animal behavior at UC Davis. She has recently become board certified in animal behavior and is the only practicing veterinary behaviorist in Los Angeles. Big area and a big job for her. Dr. Sueda's special interests include feline behavior, so I'll have to ask her lots of questions about my cats, canine anxiety disorders, and the human-animal bond. She was born and raised in Hawaii, where her family continues to reside. We'll be right back with Dr. Sueda.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Karen, thank you so much. I'll promise not to take up all our time talking about my cats and their little issues that they have. But
well, thank you so much for having me on.
I think a lot of people are confused. Why do I need a veterinary behaviorist? Why can't I just call a trainer?
Well, that's a really great question. You know, there's actually a big difference between veterinary behaviors and trainers. And when we talk about trainers, a lot of times we're specifically referring to dog trainers. Because and correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't heard about too many cat trainers out there. Usually when pets have behavior problems, they kind of have a choice of either seeking out the help of dog trainers or behaviorists who aren't necessarily veterinarians. And, you know, more recently with the advent of veterinary behavior being a specialty, there are more and more veterinary behaviorists out there. I kind of think of dog trainers or trainers in general as foreign language teachers. And in your introduction, you actually made a great point of what trainers really are out there for is to actually teach you and your pet a common language to speak. So, you know, when you say ask your dog to sit, you mean, you know, I want you to put your butt on the ground. But, you know, those are great for teaching basic commands, but may not be as useful for addressing behavior problems. Because I've actually seen a lot of dogs who are wonderful, obedience trained dogs, but are still really aggressive or still have a lot of other behavior issues. I really do think that behaviorists, whether they're non-veterinarians or veterinarians, are kind of the equivalent of human psychotherapists. Instead of just teaching, you know, a dog or a cat to perform specific behaviors like sitting or lying down, we're actually addressing the underlying reason why the pet exhibits a behavior that the owner finds problematic. So really my job during a consultation is to determine why the dog or cat or other animal is showing the behavior that the owner doesn't like and really address that underlying emotional reason why they're showing it. Once we can do that, a lot of a good behavior follows just naturally from that.
I love the way you say that a trainer is really just teaching a foreign language. That is just a fantastic way to think about it. It's kind of, yeah, okay, that makes sense to us. So many people have seen the dog whisperer and how he can get such immediate, fantastic results. Is this reality for the majority of pets that are out there?
Unfortunately not. A lot of times, too, when you see those, you know, miraculous, you know, things on TV, a lot of owners forget.
It happened in 30 minutes, yeah.
Exactly. I wish I could treat all my patients that way. You know, there's a lot of TV magic that I'm sure goes on behind the scenes and a lot of very selective, you know, cases. You know, one of my clients made a great point of saying, you know, I'm sure it would be great if you could select all of the cases that you want to see and treat. I'm sure you would have 100%, you know, compliance and 100% success rate. And you know, unfortunately, you know, what we're seeing on TV is not the reality. And a lot of times, too, a lot of what you see on TV, you know, may be very easy in the hands of a trainer who's been doing it for years and years and years, but may be very difficult for the average owner to perform at home. For me and my pets, I know that I would never, time-wise, be able to take my dogs for runs for 4 or 5 hours a day, even if it was on a treadmill. Even as good a trainer as you see on TV, the average owner isn't a trainer. You know, they don't have the years of experience behind them. So one of the things I really try to emphasize is, what can I teach you that you can put into practical management at home right away?
What are some of the most common reasons why pets are brought to you? What's their little neuroses? What's their problems?
Probably the most common behavior problem that I see is aggression. You know, that's the one that's really going to impact, you know, an owner and a pet's daily life. An owner that can't take their dog out on a walk because he's growling and acting aggressive to every person they see, or the owner is worried about taking them on a walk because, you know, the dog's aggressive to other dogs and they're worried about the liability concerns. So that's probably the most common reason I see, but owners do have to keep in the back of their mind that aggression is, there's a large number of reasons for aggression. Probably the most common one is actually fear aggression. So a lot of my patients that I see, their dogs are acting aggressive because they're actually panicked and fearful inside. They're not necessarily always protective of the owners. They're actually more aggressive when the owners are around because the dog actually feels like they have the pack behind them. Their owners are there to actually protect them. So they feel a lot more comfortable showing aggression when their owners are there.
Do you think that this came about, Dr. Sueda, because they were improperly socialized when they were puppies or kittens, or there are other reasons why you see such a commonality in this aggression problem?
I think that is a big reason why dogs and cats may be aggressive, is lack of socialization or just not enough or inadequate socialization. You know, when we've done the research, dogs go through a primary socialization period from about 4 to 14 weeks or 4 to 16 weeks of age, and that's really the time in their life when they're most adaptable. That's the time in their life when we really want to do our best to try to introduce them to all the different types of people and situations and other animals that they may encounter in the future. It's also an age, though, where we as veterinarians may have done a little bit of a poor job in the past, because a lot of veterinarians may still tell their owners, pet owners, not to take their puppy out till they're fully vaccinated. But once they've received that final vaccine at 14 or 16 weeks of age, their primary socialization period has come and gone. So that window of opportunity is slowly closing at that point. What the new thought process is behind associating keeping the dogs and cats safe in terms of not exposing them to infectious disease, but still being able to socialize in, during that time, is actually, you know, make sure that your dogs and cats have their first set of vaccines, and then take them to safe areas or safe situations to socialize them. So I really try to encourage owners to take their dogs and cats to puppy or kitten classes so they can meet other adult people, strangers, other animals, and learn good social skills. Another really good one is to have little puppy introduction parties where you invite, you know, friends over, and definitely try to make sure you're including children, adults, elderly people, people in uniforms. Invite a variety of people to your home and introduce them to the puppy in a really fun, friendly manner. Or take our puppy and cat to a friend's home where they have adult animals that are healthy, fully vaccinated, no signs of illnesses, so your puppy and kitten can socialize there too. And that's a really good, safe way to start the socialization process off on the right foot. And we can really overcome a lot of those fear behaviors we see later in life with just really good, solid exposure in a fun way, you know, earlier in life.
Having play days for your puppy and kitten. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the new LA thing.
Only the crazy Californians would be having play days for their dogs and cats. You're talking about socializing these animals, and it sounds as though, yes, when they're young, there is that critical time when they need to be have that exposure to all the different things they're going to run into later on in life. Should you be getting your puppy or kitten from the breeder or from the pet store when it's 6 weeks of age? What's the optimal time?
Usually we like it right around 6 to 8 weeks, but that really depends on what kind of environment, you know, the puppy or kitten's being exposed to at the breeder's house versus when, what kind of environment they're bringing them into at home. For those really great breeders out there that really do try to do a lot of social exposure, they can be a great benefit because they may be actually the ones that are more able to have the puppy and kitten exposed to other animals, people coming, going, seeing the other puppies or kittens in the litter. So they actually may be able to do a better job of exposing the dog or cat to a variety of new situations if you happen to be really busy during that time in your life. However, if it's a breeder or person who has a puppy or kittens who may be living in an environment that's very different from your own, it may be worthwhile bringing the puppy or kitten home a little bit sooner, maybe about 6 to 8 weeks rather than 8 to 10 weeks. I know when I was working at UC Davis, a lot of times we'd actually have owners from the San Francisco Bay Area who would get their pets from breeders who lived in very, very rural environments. So these are dogs or cats that may have never, you know, heard traffic, much less the type of cars or urban types of stimuli at their breeder's home that they were finally exposed to in the San Francisco Bay Area. I still see a lot of that here in LA too, where I'm still getting used to the LA traffic, and it's been over a year now, and I definitely have a lot of clients who purchased dogs even over the internet and had them shipped over from rural Arkansas or South Carolina, and those dogs have never seen cars or trucks or the noise or traffic of the big city. So it really depends on what kind of environment they're coming from and what kind of environment they're going to.
Besides aggression that you're seeing in dogs commonly, what are some of the other reasons why people are bringing their dogs to you?
As far as dogs are concerned, probably the next biggest one is just anxiety disorders. And a big one really nowadays is separation anxiety. A lot of these dogs are doing things like being destructive in the house when the owners aren't there, barking, which the neighbors are complaining about, you know, even doing things like urinating and defecating in the home, unfortunately. And a lot of owners don't realize that their dogs are actually having panic attacks when they're gone. A lot of owners still attribute the dog urinating the house while they're gone or ripping up the carpeting to spite or revenge. You know, my dog was mad at me because I got this new job and I can't stay home with them anymore. So when they come home, they're horrified that their dog has behaved this way and actually resort to punishment. But really, in that dog's mind, they're just so attached to their owners that they're literally having an anxiety attack when they're separated from them.
Anxiety, you would never think that would happen to a dog or a cat. We've been talking to Dr. Karen Sueda. She is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist practicing in Los Angeles. We'll be right back to hear what we can do for that dog that has panic attacks right after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing like a shaggy dog, baby. They're shagadelic. And this is the place to find out how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Oh, yeah. So stop by our pad every week and get switched on, baby. Switched on to the show that's all about attitude. Oh, behave. With your groovy host, pet edutainer Arden Moore. Yeah, baby, yeah. Every week on demand on PetLifeRadio.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Karen, you'd mentioned panic attack in dogs, and that it sounds like they're really not trying to get back at us. They're not doing it for spite. Besides quitting your job and staying home with your pet, what can a pet owner do?
I know, that would be nice if we could all, you know, make money by staying home and getting all the love and giving all the love back to our pets. I would love that job. But really what we can do, there's a lot of new things out there. And it's really important that owners realize that there are things that we can do about dogs with separation anxiety or, you know, dogs or cats with behavior problems. For separation anxiety, you know, once your dog has it, the first thing really is to identify that they actually are having, you know, a panic attack when you're gone. One thing I often tell owners or recommend that owners do that helps me in my diagnosis is actually if they have access to a video camera, is set that video camera on record, set it up where they could see their pet, where, you know, if their dog is you know, chewing at the door frame, you know, set the video camera where they can get a good view of that, and then actually leave. You leave for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and then come back and look at the tape. What we're looking for is that the dog is actually showing physical signs of anxiety, and those can be things like barking, vocalizing, panting, salivating, doing a lot of pacing behaviors. You know, owners are very good at knowing when their pets are upset, and you can clearly see that on videotape. But that really helps.
Most of these problems happen in 5 to 10 minutes. Does it happen that fast?
It does happen that fast, unfortunately. A lot of times, you know, for separation anxiety, the worst behaviors actually occur within the first half an hour, and it's almost immediate. You know, even some of these dogs will actually start showing signs even before their owners have left the house. You know, dogs are really, really smart, and they often pick up on cues that their owners are about to leave. So owners, you know, picking up their purse or their keys or putting on their shoes or jacket. A lot of pets actually realize that those are very good indicators that their owners are going to leave the house and may actually start showing signs even that early.
I know I had a black lab, and on weekends, all of a sudden, I'd go to my closet and I would put on tennis shoes, not even really thinking about it because I was going to go out for a walk. And the dog, tennis shoes, knew exactly what that meant. Like, how come I could put on tennis shoes during the week and didn't seem to know? But yes, they know this. Is there something that can be done for these poor dogs?
Yeah, what we usually do for separation anxiety, and, you know, definitely first of all, take your pet to their veterinarian, because we want to make sure that we're ruling out any other underlying medical problems. Because I've seen cases where dogs may have separation anxiety, but it's actually exacerbated by a medical issue as well. So first and foremost, take your pet to the vet to make sure that there's no physical problems. After that, talk to your veterinarian about separation anxiety. We usually address separation anxiety in two ways. One is definitely through behavior modification and training, and that really involves teaching your pet, you know, to remain calm when you leave the house. The other part of it is that there are medications out there that can help reduce the dog's anxiety. Because again, like you said earlier, it would be great if we can stay home with our pets all the time. But most of us, including myself, work at least 5 days a week. And separation anxiety can be really difficult to treat because we can't avoid leaving our pets home alone sometimes. So medication can really help in that aspect, both to help reduce anxiety so the training process actually goes faster and smoother, but also there are medications out there that you can use that will help provide pretty immediate, fast-acting anti-anxiety relief for their pet. Because again, I really like using the analogy that your pet's having a panic attack when you're gone. And for those people out there that have had panic attacks, it's a very difficult emotional and physically draining experience. And so from even an ethologic sense or a welfare aspect of it, I really feel that a lot of these pets that are suffering so badly with anxiety really need something on board to just help them calm down as soon as possible.
So the pill is not the answer, but the pill is part of the solution. Is that correct?
Exactly, exactly. And for people that really don't want to resort to medication, we've definitely treated pets with separation anxiety with training alone. But if the vast majority of people, from my experience, both to help their pet because they really are suffering, as well as to help themselves, because who wants to come home to, you know, a destroyed door or ripped up carpeting or, you know, having to clean up after your pet if they've urinated or defecated in the house, you know, that medication can really be beneficial, but definitely talk to your veterinarian about prescribing it, because only veterinarians can prescribe those medications.
Now, I know some of my clients will say, you know, my dog seems to have separation anxiety, just hates it when I leave. I want to get myself another dog to keep a company. I think that will help. What's your opinion about that?
It can help in some cases, but definitely not all. You know, best case scenario, what I usually recommend to clients is if you think that that might help your dog, go ahead and see if you have a friend that has a dog or that you can borrow. And again, set it up where you have a video camera and see if that actually does help. But I definitely don't advocate, you know, going out to shelter and adopting a pet just to see, you know, what the off chance that this might work. Best case scenario, yes, it might work. Worst case scenario, you come home to a dog with, you know, two dogs with problems. So now you have quite some work to do.
Well, you've been talking about dogs with their problems, aggression and separation anxiety. What's the number one problem that cats will present for?
The number one problem that cats present for is not using the litter box. And that
by far, what my cats are doing. Yes.
Oh, okay. So you know how you've been dealing with this problem. Usually that can be, we think of that in two different scenarios. Either cats aren't using the litter box and in terms of finding another toileting area where they want to void their bladder, or we also see cats that are actually urine marking or urine spraying, and that's usually depositing a stream of urine on a vertical surface, like, you know, the side of a couch or against a door or a wall.
Why are these wondrous kitties not using their kitty box?
It's a variety of different reasons. So never, unfortunately, one solution. We kind of think of it in terms of there's behavioral problems that can cause it, and there's medical problems. Again, it's a situation where number one thing to do is take your cat to their vet. I can't emphasize that enough because, you know, we definitely see cats with medical problems, you know, urinary tract infections, stones in their bladder, other underlying metabolic problems or endocrine problems that can cause your cat to urinate outside the box. So it may not be a behavioral problem at all, but maybe a medical problem. But when we do think about behavioral problems, probably at least the cases I see, the number one reason that cats don't use the box is because there's something about the litter box they don't like, whether it's not being cleaned enough, whether it's they would actually prefer an uncovered litter box versus a covered one, or if they don't particularly like the type of litter that you're using. Probably another common reason is that, especially in multi-cat households, a really common one that I see is when there's a little bit of tension between the cats in the household, one cat who's a more bullying cat may actually be really subtly guarding the litter box as a resource. So that cat that you see that's just kind of stretched out, lying in front of the litter box, giving the evil eye to any cat that approaches, that cat may actually be guarding the litter box. And, you know, again, cats aren't dumb. They think, oh, well, the bully cat's lying there, and if I walk toward him, I might get myself into a fight. Maybe that couch is looking good right now. So they're going to maybe avoid that litter box and find another good place to use the bathroom.
Now, would you agree, I've heard in the past, that you should have one cat box, or indoor cats, one cat box per cat, preferably an open box, and using clumping unscented litter and clean it at least once a day.
Exactly. That's exactly what I recommend clients. Usually we like having, you know, at least one litter box per cat. So again, that's for a variety of different reasons. One is if you do have any inner cat aggression issues in the household or cats that may not be getting along all the time, at least you're providing your cat with another choice. You know, if like one cat's guarding a litter box, they can go to another one. Another one is just in my household, I have one cat, but I actually have two litter boxes because it serves as a little bit of a buffer in terms of my cleanliness habits. When you get a little bit busy, sometimes you forget to scoop the litter box. And if you have a very fastidious cat, just leaving the litter unscooped for a day or two, because we all get busy, especially around the holidays, that it just gives the cat another choice of a cleaner box to go to as well. Scooping a litter box at least once a day, I also recommend, if you do have a litter box problem, emptying the litter box, cleaning the litter box with just hot water and a very mild dish detergent at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, refilling with completely new litter as well can often help. And then unscented clumping litters are the ones that when we've done studies, cats really prefer. Usually uncovered litter boxes, no litter box liner.
Well, I'm doing all that and I'll continue doing it, but still one of my kitties periodically has issues. So yes, we'll work on it. We're trying to hope that my husband never listens to these podcasts because then he'll know the cat's still having issues. What are some of the other reasons that kitties are presented to you?
Probably the second common reason is just inner cat aggression issues in the household. So, you know, the typical scenario of, you know, you have one cat and want to introduce another one. You hope that they're going to be best buddies, but sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. Often I tell owners, you know, it's kind of a hit or miss deal. It's almost like having a college roommate. You know, you're either going to love them and be best friends for life, Or you might just mutually tolerate one another, or you're bitter enemies because you hate the way that they always wake you up in the morning. So really, sometimes it's a little bit of a hit or miss prospect when bringing another cat into the household. And the other reason we often see those problems is because that inner cat aggression issue can often cause other problems like the inappropriate elimination issues, other anxiety issues. Like sometimes I've even had cats where another cat's been introduced where the first cat ends up hiding most of the time because they don't want to interact with that other cat.
Are there ways of optimizing the chances? Because it sounds as though you're thinking that cats truly can get together in large numbers, or at least in a party of two. Cats don't have to be solitary residents of a home. They can have a buddy. But does it help to have two males together, a male, a female, older, younger? Are there ways to optimize when you bring home a new one that it's going to work?
Yeah, there's definitely ways to optimize it. There's definitely the myth out there that cats are asocial creatures, but anybody who has multiple cats in their home usually can tell you that cats are very social. Even with us, you know, they look at us as other social creatures too. So cats can actually form really strong friendships with kind of their preferred pals. Ways to optimize it is, if you don't have cats and you're thinking about getting cats, usually getting litter mates or cats that have been together at the shelter and bring two in at the same time, you know those cats get along, and you don't have to go through any other problems because those cats are already pals. Another really good way to do it is doing a very slow and gradual introduction. So if you have a cat that you already have in your household and want to bring in a new cat, what I would probably do is actually have the new cat in a room by themselves, litter box, food, all the comforts of home. And over, you know, a period of a week or two even, just slowly introduce them to one another. So you can have them sniff each other underneath a closed door. I even have owners fashion little toys that the cats can play with the pawsies underneath the doors with. Switch the cats out, so you bring the new cat out into the rest of the house, put your old resident cat in the room so they have a chance to smell each other's scent around. And just do a more gradual introduction rather than plop the carrier down, open the door out, let the two cats see each other and say, okay, have at it, guys.
It sounds as though it's a great way of saying no. Just slow and sure is a good way of doing it. Dr. Karen Sueda, if people wanted more information about what I can do for my neurotic cat and wigged out Westie, where can they contact you, or where can they go for more information on veterinary behaviorists?
Sure. To contact me, I'm working at VCA West Los Angeles Animal Hospital in Los Angeles. We're right on Sepulveda and Santa Monica in West LA. They can reach me at 310-478-5035. I'm actually working a little bit in a different building than the main West LA hospital just because it's a little quieter and easier on my anxious patients here in a quieter environment. They can also go to our website, and that's www.vcawla.com, and go to the left-hand side. There's a section for specialty services, and click on behavior there. There's a lot of information on that website. If you're not in the Los Angeles area, you can also definitely talk to your veterinarian, but there are veterinary behaviorists throughout the country. They can go to a website to find if there's a veterinary behaviorist in their area, and that's www.dacvb.org, and that stands for the Diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, long term, but again, D as in dog, A as in apple, C as in cat, V as in vet, B as in behavior.org, and they can see if there's any other behaviorists in their area. And then there's just a couple of good general websites. If you just want general information on dog or cat behavior, the American Animal Hospital Association website actually has really good behavior advice there, and that's www.healthypet.com. The Denver Dumb Friends League also has really good resources. Their handouts are actually used in shelters across the country as behavior handouts, and that's www.ddfl.org. And the American Association of Feline Practitioners also has really good resources on their website, and that's www.aafp.org. PETonline, all one word, .org. So there's a lot of good information on those websites, and that's where I would steer owners, just for some general information about behavior.
Well, Dr. Karen Sueda, you have given us some marvelous information. I have a feeling I'm going to have to call you back about my kitty's little issues, see
You're
where we can take
welcome.
It from there. So if you want to learn a foreign language, a canine or feline foreign language, you can get a trainer. But if you need to know what's going on between their ears, a veterinary behaviorist is just what the doctor ordered. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on PetLifeRadio.com and The Pet Doctor. Thank you very much for listening. No matter if it's a physical problem, a behavioral problem, the best person to ask first is your veterinarian. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.